Reuters reporter Micah Rosenberg recently uncovered this letter. It was a little strange. It came from an automobile plant in Alabama, and it was addressed to U.S. consular officials in Mexico.
What did the letter say?
Well, the letter said that they were very desperate for workers. They said that there had been a shortage of workers in Alabama because of COVID and other, you know, related economic disruptions.
Yeah, it sounds familiar. I feel like a lot of industries are facing a worker shortage right now.
Exactly. And they said specifically that they were under huge pressure from Hyundai to keep up manufacturing and that there was basically a sort of zero tolerance for slowdowns on the production line. And so, you know, in their own words, they said that they weren't able to find workers locally. And so because of that, they needed to recruit these workers from Mexico.
This letter caught Micah's attention because she'd been investigating real problems at this Alabama plant, which specializes in metal stamping. She'd documented instances where Mexican engineers had been hired for jobs under false pretenses. She'd found numerous OSHA violations.
You know, tens of thousands of dollars of OSHA fines over the years at this particular plant as recently as this year, you know, including crush and amputation hazards at the factory.
And there was something else. Micah had learned this plant was hiring underaged workers, some as young as 12 or 13. And lots of people knew, including the people working alongside the kids.
A lot of times they wouldn't ask necessarily the workers their ages, or if they did ask, you know, they might say that they were older.
So the workers kind of knew, but it was a little bit of a don't ask, don't tell situation.
Exactly.
I feel like a lot of Americans are familiar with the fact that there's a labor shortage right now. There just aren't enough workers for a lot of industries. But do you think that your reporting uncovers a kind of darker side to what's happening in the labor force right now? A desperation among people who are hiring, especially for jobs that are tough.
Yeah, well, I think it definitely has exacerbated a lot of existing problems, in the labor supply chain.
I think what you're saying is it's been bad, but now it may be even a little worse.
Yes, and I think that that's definitely shown in the letter that you mentioned. The company itself is saying to U.S. consular officials in that letter that, you know, they are really struggling to find the workers that they need.
Today on the show, the labor shortage is bad everywhere. But how did this factory reach the point where children got put to work? I'm Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next? Stick around.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. In their reporting, Micah and her colleagues focused on two towns in Alabama, Enterprise and Laverne. They've become home to a large immigrant population, especially from Mexico, Guatemala, and other parts of Central America. People come here ready for jobs in manufacturing, agriculture.
You know, these are pretty small communities. There's, a sort of sense of everyone knows everyone in a way. And many of the migrants live in Enterprise and are bused over an hour every day to this plant in Laverne.
For you, your most recent reporting on a child labor violation, it began with the disappearance of a 13-year-old girl. So I'm hoping you can really tell me that story from the beginning. What happened here?
So over the course of our reporting, we found out about this 13-year-old Guatemalan girl who had gone missing from her home in Enterprise in February. This set off a statewide Amber Alert for missing children, which flashed across phones and over the entire state, said that she was with an adult man. And, you know, that set off this police manhunt. And it ended up that the police were able to locate the two of them on the very same day that she disappeared. And they had actually crossed state lines into Georgia. The man who was also from Guatemala, he was arrested and later deported. But when we got the police records of the incident, we heard on the calls back and forth between the Alabama and Georgia police who were coordinating the search, you know, saying that the two were actually co-workers and that they had met at work. And you could even hear on the police calls that the police officers themselves, you know, sounded surprised that she was so young and working. She was 13, but actually at the time the police thought that she was 12. We eventually, you know, through our reporting, discovered that she worked at this Smart plant in nearby Laverne, Alabama.
The Smart plant, that's the name of the auto parts manufacturer. It makes parts for Hyundai's flagship plant in nearby Montgomery. Young teens are prohibited from working in factories like this. It's too dangerous.
You know, and then we later learned from the police and the family themselves that her two brothers had also worked there. They were 12 and 15 years old.
When you talked to the girl and her family, like after all this happened, she was returned. Did she go back to work?
No. And, you know, what we discovered is that this incident sort of set off internal, we think, alarm bells. The company, we understand that we learned from sources, sort of quietly dismissed a number of underage workers, including the girl and her family. So when my colleague spoke with them, her father said that they were really trying to put this incident behind them. You know, they had enrolled the children in school.
What's so interesting to me about this story is that it kind of reveals all of the issues with having kids in the workforce. Like, it's dangerous. These kids weren't in school, right?
Yeah, they weren't in school.
And then in addition to all that, you know, this girl was taken by a coworker, because once you're in the workforce, you're kind of in an adult space where people are acting as adults. It's just it's a danger to have a kid in a workplace in a whole other way that I hadn't even thought of.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that this is part of the problem with the whole system, is that, you know, if the parents potentially are working in these places, you know, they're not earning enough money to support themselves and their families, you know, potentially their families back home, they feel compelled to, you know, have their children join them in the labor force. And then it is just, you know, sort of a chain reaction from there.
How does this work? The process of getting a 13-year-old a job, especially in manufacturing, they just don't appear to be of age. Some do at that age, but that's pretty rare. It's not like a simple mistake could have been made here. So if I'm a 12 or 13-year-old who wants to go work at a factory, what needs to happen?
You know, what we've learned is that, you know, for migrants who might not have legal work documents, They often can find jobs through various staffing agencies. And, you know, from speaking to labor experts and workers themselves, we know that these staffing agencies can often have lax hiring practices or make minimal checks when hiring.
Staffing agencies sounds so neutral for what they're doing. I mean, I don't know, like how is, I guess that is the word you would use, but it is interesting. Staffing agencies sounds like you're hiring a secretary or something.
Yeah, you know, staffing agencies, labor recruiters, you know, sometimes there have been cases where, you know, they have veered into labor traffickers. You know, there's a broad range, I think, that falls under that umbrella. You know, these types of intermediaries are very, very common throughout the United States and in a bunch of different industries. They're often used without any problem at all. But, you know, what labor experts and current and former officials have told us is that sometimes these companies can use these types of firms as a kind of buffer for unsavory hiring practices. So they can say, you know, oh, we didn't know what was going on because the workers came from these third party labor recruiters.
Which, of course, you know, relies on you saying, well, do you have eyes? Can you see how old the children are, though?
What we have seen in some cases is that the company will say, well, you know, this third party hiring firm, you know, they hired the workers, they vetted the workers, they said that they passed their IDs, you know, through federal checks sometimes. And that's as far as we need to go in terms of our own checks.
When we come back, the Smart Plant in Luverne, Alabama, it isn't the only place where exploitation happens, but it's hard to address without harming the migrants themselves. We'll talk about why.
If you want to understand what is happening in the United States right now, you really need to understand what's happening with the courts, the law, and the Supreme Court. The battle between democracy and whatever this cage match is that we're witnessing, it's going to be won and lost at the ballot box, but it's also going to be won and lost in the courtrooms. I'm Dahlia Lithwick. I host Slate's legal podcast, Amicus, and we are doubling our output, bringing you weekly episodes from here on in, because how else can we keep an eye on the many trials of Donald Trump, the conservative legal movement's assaults on our rights, the Supreme Court's latest slate of environmental gutting, gun safety eviscerating cases on the docket. So follow Amicus wherever you get your podcasts, new episodes dropping every Saturday morning.
You've also investigated the use of child labor in the poultry industry, looking into chicken processing plants just actually up the road from that auto part manufacturer, Smart, where the 13-year-old went missing. Can you talk to me about that industry? Because it seems like for years, the poultry industry has been something that the U.S. government has been aware child labor can be used here and is used with some frequency.
Yeah, well, we first started looking at Enterprise Alabama actually earlier this year when we learned that U.S. officials had some growing concerns that unaccompanied minors who, you know, had crossed the border alone and usually passed through government shelters and then are released to relatives in the United States, we learned that there was a larger number than usual being released to this particular town. We found that investigators didn't find labor trafficking per se, but they found this sort of much more common type of arrangements where minors are able to come and find jobs. And so, you know, we profiled one particular teenager who had traveled to the United States by herself, and she was released to relatives in Enterprise.
This teenager's name is Amelia.
And then just, you know, days after she arrived, she was able to get an ID card.
A fake ID card
where, you know, the ID brokers can say you can basically sort of pick your age, you know, to say that you were older than she was. She was 16. And she, within days, got a job in a chicken processing plant.
And she needed that money, right? Like, she had paid thousands of dollars to a smuggler to get her here?
Exactly. And, you know, these workers are very vulnerable because of that. You know, they're often paying off very, very expensive debts for their journeys to the United States, which can be very dangerous as well. They are helping their families here in the U.S., bringing money into the household, and then at the same time are supporting relatives abroad. And oftentimes, you know, they're fleeing difficult and dangerous situations at home.
Did Amelia see any problem with what she was doing, or did it just feel like what she had to do?
I think she felt, you know, this was a very run-of-the-mill thing for a lot of these workers. I mean, they come here to work. You know, they may have worked in their home countries starting from a young age, and are really seeing as a necessity to help their families. You know, this is one reason why it's very difficult to get workers to speak up about problems or conditions at the plant, because oftentimes, you know, these jobs are essential for them, and there's a real vulnerability. They can sort of be hired or fired at will.
You put your finger in your reporting on something else, which is that this issue with child labor may be getting worse because so many more unaccompanied minors seem to be being intercepted at the border than before. Can you explain that a bit?
Yeah, well, there's definitely been a large increase in the number of migrants being arrested at the border. Many, many of them are sort of quickly turned around. There's a policy in place now since the COVID epidemic where many people can be expelled. But in the case of unaccompanied minors, the Biden administration exempted them from that particular policy to prevent them from being sent back to danger in Mexico. So just because of the sort of overall increase of migrants, there are a lot who are getting through.
It's interesting because President Biden has said he wants to stop raiding plants that may be employing migrant workers. I wonder, looking at the situations you've chronicled at auto and poultry plants, like, is there an argument that without doing those kinds of raids or something similar, you're going to not uncover real abuses that are happening too? Like, for people who work in this area, like, what do they want to see done at this point to prevent the child labor that you reported on?
Yeah, well, you know, and I think in some ways it's the most difficult part of this reporting because, you know, as you said, the Biden administration has said that they do not want to do widespread workplace raids. And they have instead said that they want to focus on holding employers accountable who might be violating laws. And in fact, earlier this year, they issued some guidance for migrants who might, you know, act as whistleblowers, that they can request a letter of support to get deferred action, which would mean they would be protected from deportation and, you know, could potentially get valid work permits.
So being a whistleblower could work for you in terms of immigration rather than against.
Exactly. And I think that was the intention of these types of rules. The problem is that in practice, this is, you know, very difficult to implement just because, you know, first of all, a lot of people might not know about these protections or how to access them. You know, they might need the support of nonprofits or immigration lawyers, you know, who might not be you know, very numerous in these isolated areas where some of these factories are. So, you know, on paper, I think advocates have been pleased to see these types of changes in the Biden administration, which is a big departure from the Trump administration, which very explicitly focused on workplace raids. But I think for, you know, migrants themselves, they can see that, you know, very quickly, policy can change from one administration to another.
Yeah. Do you think any of the migrants you spoke with would speak up if they noticed a 12-year-old working down the line from them?
They didn't willingly. People spoke to us mostly anonymously. You know, a lot of former workers spoke to us who you know, were no longer at the plant and, you know, who might not be at as much risk of speaking out. So I do think that there's, you know, an incentive to not make these stories public.
Do you like look at your products differently now? Like chicken, cars? I feel like you've spent a lot of time researching the really awful ways these very common things come to reach the rest of the United States. Do you think about it all differently?
Yeah, well, you know, that's an interesting question. And I feel like it sort of goes back to, you know, I started reporting for Reuters many years ago back in Guatemala. I was based there and in Mexico. I was abroad for 7 years. And, you know, during my time there, I really saw how a lot of these sort of common day products are made and how they come into the supply chain. And, you know, oftentimes they're were children working in the coffee fields, picking coffee plants. You know, in some ways, people expect that in the United States, that labor conditions should or would be better than they are abroad. But I think that this reporting shows that, you know, there's often vulnerabilities for workers and you know, places where they can be in a lot of danger, you know, making everyday goods that we consume sort of without thinking about it.
Michael Rosenberg, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the conversation.
Michael Rosenberg is the national immigration reporter for Reuters. She co-authored her recent investigation with Joshua Schneier and Christina Cook. And that's the show. What Next is produced by Elena Schwartz, Carmel Dalshad, Madeline Ducharme, and Mary Wilson. We are getting a ton of support right now from Jared Downing and Diana Rubinova. We are led by Alicia Montgomery and Joanne Levine. And I'm Mary Harris. Go track me down on Twitter. Say hello. I'm at Mary's desk. Thanks for listening. Talk to you tomorrow.